Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
Well, I promise I did not plan it, but at the end of my theater-going week, I realized that all four of the shows I had seen were the works of female playwrights. One was about a woman who is credited with being Emily Dickinson's editor. One deals with a young refugee who has had too much experience using her body when necessary. Another focuses on a chef, a male in this case, who boils and sautés for a couple less than stirring, pun intended, hours. Now, those are all original works. Finally, and frankly, the most impactful show I saw has returned to the public theater after four decades. And wouldn't you know, it has never felt more relevant. So, let's start with arguably the biggest name among the playwrights. That would be Teresa Riebeck, who seems to create something new every 10 minutes. Seared is her latest, and it's an MCC production premiering on West 52nd. Now, I can tell you that the production has received wildly mixed reviews. While Riebeck's works are almost always interesting and usually filled with enough one-line zingers to make your commitment worth it, Seared, for me, is more difficult to recommend. It deals with a perfectionist chef in a Brooklyn restaurant, his business partner who has to worry about things besides scallops and arugula, and a female consultant brought in to make things more efficient. The draw here for seasoned theater audiences is Raul Esparza, who plays that chef, described as a brilliant hothead. The first act is one long and loud argument, and if that sounds like a worthwhile time, go for it. Riebeck does come up with a few goodies. We're not big enough to be idiosyncratic. An infinite number of doors open with butter. And while I think the world of restaurants and changing food habits are ripe for exploration, damn, this is so tempting. No, I'm not going to resort to other words like undercooked or overheated. But let me just say, I am looking forward to what Teresa Riebeck offers next, which, knowing her, could be tomorrow. Now, next up and premiering at Lincoln Center's smallest venue, the Clare Tow, is a 90-minute piece called Power Strip. This one feels like a work in process, almost like half a play. Nevertheless, it's a timely and even compelling tale, focusing on a Syrian refugee named Yasmin who has landed in Greece, hiding out, trying to earn enough money to take herself to friendlier countries. This may be Europe, but Europe isn't here, she says. Clearly, the word about her mysterious presence has gotten out. I heard there was a girl outside the walls living in an olive yard with a power strip and that you could do anything to her, says one male visitor. Yes, Yasmin has that strip, and occasionally others come to charge, at least that's what they say. She claims to be earning money by doing laundry and babysitting, but we don't see any of that. We do come to realize she is a pretty good bargainer, and when necessary, uses her body to do so. Three men enter the picture, but this is really about a tough young woman who has already seen and suffered too much. And it feels very of the moment as talk of Syria and Turkey fills a slender script. The playwright here is Sylvia Khoury, New York-born of French and Libyan descent. Hers is an impressive resume already, and this is an impressive first take on what I hope will be an expanded and deepened next one. Now, these productions are getting smaller and smaller stage-wise and selling out virtually every show at 59 East 59's tiniest venue is one called Woman of the World. I believe that's due to two names. The star of this one-woman piece, Kathleen Chalifant, who is one of the most highly respected in the business, and the poet, Emily Dickinson, who it's fair to say is having a moment. Yes, more than a century plus after her death, there have been at least two feature films made about her lately, and now a series on the new Apple TV network offers a hip version, Emily is a Misunderstood Teen. Written by Rebecca Gilman, our single narrator is one Mabel Loomis Todd, who apparently played a key role in collecting and editing Dickinson's poems, which she describes as a wilderness of sadness and hopelessness. Kathleen Chalifant is warm and witty as she veers off from the supposed subject and often onto herself. Even before I formed a memory, I knew I would someday do something brilliant, including dishing on her neighbors and on a long, heartbreaking love affair, all in the seemingly cozy and innocent Amherst, Mass. This is an easy and pleasant 75-minute storytelling experience. Well, the last show of my week is at the Public Theater, a spirited revival of For Colored Girls Who Have Considered Suicide When the Rainbow Is Enough, spelled E-N-U-F. The playwright, Natsaki Shange, I hope I'm pronouncing that right, called it a choreo poem in 1976 when it first and last played at the Public. Here we have seven women wearing colors of the rainbow performing their personal stories. The cast is absolutely terrific, as are many of their musings. My love is too delicate to have thrown back in my face. We gotta dance to keep from dying. Being alive and being a woman and being colored is a metaphysical dilemma I haven't conquered yet. Well, I saw this one all those years ago, but at that time it seemed a series of monologues. This production feels defiant, yes, but also reliant. They never leave the stage and seem very invested in each other's scars and memories and often harrowing experiences. I was happy to see a diverse audience, not unusual for the Public, but especially for this one at this time. The show felt a tad long, but full disclosure, I was anxious about getting home to see the last game of the World Series. So it was an interesting female-fueled week at the theater for me. Ironically, when I sat down at the Clairiteau Theater, I noticed that the seats are all named for theater names. I was honored to be seated in Wendy Wasserstein. And Jill, somehow that seemed coincidental and oddly fitting.
Well, we talk about how things all happen for a reason.
So. Yeah, who knew?
Exactly. No, I think that's a... I think that's a great idea. It's almost as good as the, in Britain, in London, the blue plaques.
Ah, uh-huh.
Shakespeare lived here. Whereas if you come up to, for example, Pawling, New York, I think that just about every place has a George Washington slept here during the...
Oh.
So, no, they're special and then they're special.
Yeah. And Wendy Wasserstein also felt fitting because she so much...
She's a woman.
A woman, and so much of her career happened at Lincoln Center. They were really her big benefactors. I'm not sure she ever got to Broadway until the very, very last. Maybe Heidi's Chronicle was the only one of all her plays, I believe, that went to Broadway.
Yeah, historically speaking. But then when did Lincoln Center, wasn't there some change of status somewhere along the way for Lincoln Center or no?
To become a Broadway
house, yeah.
Yes, well, only one theater there is considered Broadway because of its numbers of seats, and that's the big one, the Vivian Beaumont, where Great Society's playing now, and My Fair Lady, they get the big ones. And that is considered Broadway, but I saw Heidi's Chronicle on real, real Broadway. But, yeah, the other two theaters in Lincoln Center are small and smaller, and they are definitely not Broadway. But, yeah, it's a confusing one, and Lincoln Center itself produces other plays that aren't done at Lincoln Center that are on Broadway. For example, Heidi's Chronicle, maybe if I went back and looked, there was probably a Lincoln Center production. So it's more than the average theater goer needs to know. It's what we call inside baseball.
Except that sometimes it's useful to... I was, speaking of inside baseball, I was watching a football game the other night. And the reason that I mentioned it is because everything was so, my new favorite word, metricized. Everything is like, well, this has got to be, and this is a new thing for betting. You play the percentages. You bet on the bet on the bet. Does that sound like option trading, anybody? But never mind. So
every, it's like fantasy.
Well, you've got a 36% chance of this, or is it? And it's so interestingly tunnel visioned downwards that you just stop watching the player. I don't, because I don't follow the other stuff. But the temptation is to stop watching the overview of the game because you're so focused on what the percentage of the play is. And
It's unbelievable. Ever since it preceded Moneyball for baseball, but when everything became it, that's about statistics, which is part of what you're talking about, his at-bat average or is better than, more important than whatever. But also, I'm just amazed with any sports, the statistics that they have on hand. They must have little researchers sitting underneath their feet.
No, you don't need that anymore.
You don't need that anymore. You're absolutely right. In the old days, they used to have that. In the news business. Walter Cronkite used to have a little person sitting underneath his desk, handing him notes, you know, with something.
But no, of course what they was don't. Yeah. And I don't mean this as a bad or good. It's more nuanced than that. But having someone pull up the relevant information. Mm-hmm. Around a larger topic that is in context versus right. having an either or, 46% say this and 42% say this. You don't know that those 46 and that 42 is, you don't know whether it was the same questions. You just hear 46 and 42.
Of course. Well, of course, we're going to be living with this for the next year and a half before the election, where there's 20 polls a day. And we don't know what, like you say, you don't know exactly what the question, do you believe in this kind of impeachment? Do you believe in that kind of impeachment? You know, and who knows if people even tell the truth, you know, it's too many. We're too poll crazy. And, you know, they didn't do such a good job last time. But and, you know what? They didn't learn a lesson, because you turn on the TV, which I do, and there's just poll after poll after poll after poll.
Nope, you're absolutely right. It's certainly a lot of deja vu all over again. But how it relates to the theater-going experience is, I think that as people just enjoy themselves more, I know that sounds trite, but you go out and you look for the entertainment value or to learn something or. Like, what are the reasons that you used to go to a show?
Yeah, well, word of mouth is still really, even aside from my job, so to speak, word of mouth for me is still the most important thing. But, you know, you're talking about the statistics. There are so many theater websites now called, for example, ShowScore is a very popular one. And you get yourself a name there, and then you write down what you think of the current shows, and then they do the statistics, 61% liked it, 32%, you know. Well, for a lot of people, and I guess if you're going out to pay, you know, $100 a ticket or even $75 maybe for a smaller show, you know, that helps. How many liked it, how many didn't, but I don't know. I don't know, maybe it's too much. Just go, enjoy. That's what I'm saying with this show, Seared. I came back, I didn't care for it very much, but I have to say, I started reading other people's. You know, the Wall Street Journal said, this is the best thing you're going to see off Broadway all year. Well, okay. But, you know, it's all, you know, in the end, it's about how you feel. What took you there, how you felt when you were there, and who you're going to tell to see it or not when you left.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.